Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2012. Lecture 14, delivered on March 1, 2012. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 1.
Today, review for exam one. Exam one is 60 minutes in length, no more than that. Exam one, as all of my exams, has three parts to it. Part one is multiple choice, or multiple guess, if that's the way you want to try it. Sorry, that was insensitive. 20 questions. They could be on any topic at all that I've covered. Remember, in this class, if I have said it in class, you're responsible for it. If it's been in the textbook, but I never mentioned it in class, you're not responsible for it. So if you're looking at the textbook, make sure that it's something that I've talked about in class, or that if it's not in the textbook, if I've talked about it, you're responsible for it. Those 20 questions can be all over the board. I'll come back to that in a little bit. That is 40% of the exam. You then have a workout section, part two, where you do some quantitative work. My policy is that 2 days before the exam, and that would be on Sunday evening for this semester, for this exam one, I post some information that might help you with one or two problems. Now, I don't tell you this is what I'm going to ask on the exam. I just provide you with some information, and you should pretty much know what that information would relate to. So, for example, and I'm not saying that this is what you will see, but for example, you might see on Sunday night in Blackboard and on my own website the financials of a public corporation for the past 3 years. Now, that would probably clue you. Well, if you saw the financials of a corporation, what might I ask based upon financials? Do you have any idea what I could ask about it? Say?
Cash flow questions.
Cash flow questions, I could more likely ask something about, starts with an R.
Ratio.
Ratios, yes. I could ask you some ratio analysis. Just give me some ratios. Give me some changes. Do some of those percent deltas for me. That might be a good thing that I could ask. So it might help you, benefit you if you saw financials. Not that I'm going to give you financials, but if I did give you financials, it would benefit you to work out all those ratios and the changes in the ratios, changes in sales and all that, and maybe get that down on your note card in very tiny print, of course. I might also, for example, I might add that same little bit of information after I've given you the financials. I might give you sales projections with probabilities and tell you variable costs, the percent of sales, the fixed operating costs, the interest expense. So it might behoove you, if you had that information, to assume that I'm going to ask you about business risk, operating leverage, financial leverage. Yes. It will be. Yeah, it will be. I don't want to do it if it's not symmetric. That's way too much like work. Yeah. And once you know that it's symmetric, I mean, these CV problems look really hard at first, but once you get the hang of how you can fit the CVs together, find the sigmas and the expected values, they're really not that bad at all. So if I were to put up the financials of a company and then give you a probability distribution for projected sales for next year, along with variable cost percentage and the fixed operating costs, interest expense, and the tax percentages, you might reasonably assume that I was going to ask you about what's the sales risk, what's the business risk, what's the contribution of operating leverage, what's the contribution of financial leverage to net income volatility. It might be worth it for you to calculate those and put those down on your card so that you would have those for the exam. You would have every opportunity to get those exactly right. Remember what I told you about giving me answers and quantitative answers. Two decimal places always. Don't impress me that your calculator can do 20 decimal places. Don't give me three. Give me two. If it's a percentage, it's two decimal places after you've converted it to a percentage, with proper rounding included. Again, that's crucial in the sense that we give in any company you go into, if it's worth its salt, you're going to have people above you that have given you house rules. The better you stick to the house rules, the better off you're going to be in terms of them liking the presentations that you provide them. Okay, enough of that. Now, as far as other questions go, certainly I could ask you some questions about, like I did on that quiz, okay, here's some financials. I've left some pieces out of it. Can you tell me what the retained earnings at the beginning of the year are, the net income at the end of the year, based upon the other numbers that I give you? And again, I'll put up a key to that quiz for the weekend. I'll try to put the box with those outside my office so you can dig through those. I'll try to get that out there by Saturday. If you want to find yours in that pile. It probably would be worth your while also to know what causes cash flow to go up, what causes cash flow to go down. I might very well ask you something about that as well. Certainly. The quantitative section is not intense. Just don't make a mistake. It's a place where you can do very well in the exam. Look, the multiple choice section, the reason I give so many different possible, different parts to an exam is because some people are strong in certain ways and some people are strong in other ways, and I give you all a chance to shine. But I warn you, the multiple choice section is just kind of all over the board. You could do pretty well overall and still get your butt kicked a little bit in that. This quantitative section, it's a place where you can just get the answers because really at the end of the day, it's arithmetic we're doing in here. We're not doing calculus. So at the end of the day, if you can just do the arithmetic, you should be doing pretty well in that section too. Where you could easily get your buttocks kicked is section 3, which is short essays. It's a mainstay of my exams. And here's the deal. I give you five problems. Answer me here. You answer 4 of them. Don't answer 5. You're going to have spaces for 4 answers. So you choose 4 of them. And don't say, well, why don't you credit me for the best 4 of my 5 answers? Don't do that. You've got 4 shots out of the 5. It's one sentence and one sentence only. Don't go over a sentence. I will mark you down for that. I promise you, I will mark you down. The reason I'm doing this is because in business, you have to say what you have to say. The people above you who ask questions don't want your essay. They want you to give them an answer. Now, as far as you give me a complete sentence, grammatically correct. For God's sake, if you use text language, I will eat your ass. No B/C. No plus instead of and. No lol, LOL. And don't draw me a damn picture either, although a couple last semester were pretty darn good, if a little obscene one was. I guess 1 point credit was pretty good for that. But give me a grammatically correct, proper answer, complete sentence, and one sentence only, for heaven's sakes. You will get marked down if you're not going to be able to do that, because one of the things that executives, and it happened just last month, guy sitting at a dinner. He just comes on my ass. What the hell is the matter with you? Aren't you teaching your students any English anymore? I get these messy emails from these people from ISU and they can't even use a grammatically correct sentence. Bitch, bitch, bitch. So that's what I do to you. Bitch, bitch, bitch. Okay? And again, make sure that you are giving me an answer that is compact. Also, when you give me an answer on an essay question, give me what I told you. Don't go on Wikipedia or Yahoo Answers or anything like that to find out what a good answer would be. Remember, the person on the other side of your connection on the internet could be a cat. Okay? Don't do that. I'm going to tell you another reason, too. I'm going to give you some possible questions. I'm going to throw out some. Some of them won't be on the exam, but some of them that I'm going to give you, possible questions for the essay part, they're going to be there. And the reason I want my answer is, aside from the fact that when you get into some company, you are going to be giving parrot answers to questions. If you want to answer a question, you answer it the way that they expect you to answer it. And it might be different for different places. However, if you go on Investopedia and get an answer, get a good response to something that I'm going to tell you here, you run two risks. First of all, Investopedia is for idiots. You're not idiots. You're the college people, the business people. Investopedia is for people who don't know shit about business, and so they're getting some cat telling them what they think is a good answer. Don't do that, okay? And the second reason is because oftentimes when I'm giving you a response, there's a reason why I want this response, because it builds on something I'm going to be doing later in the course. That's quite common with my with responses that I challenge you with. Now I'm going to go through in part three. I'm just going to go through, and I always do a nice little walk around, and I just give you possible questions or possible challenges that might be in part three. Some of these you'll never see. Some of them, yeah, it's exactly what I'm going to ask you. So listen up as I give you a set of 10 possible questions and or challenges that you could have to give me a single complete sentence answer for. Here we go. What do I mean when I say that shareholders have residual claim on cash flows? Again, what do I mean when I say that shareholders have residual claim on cash flows of a corporation? What is the primary difference between a corporation and all other business entities? Define market cap. What is the process by which surplus and deficit economic units are brought together? Again, what is the process by which surplus and deficit economic units are brought together? Is that yours?
Yeah.
It is. Oh, it's Neutrogena. Oh, here, you might want to try it. It's actually pretty cool stuff. Weirdo. In terms of financial intermediation, what are the three factors that must be considered in matching a surplus and deficit economic unit? In terms of financial intermediation, What are the three factors that must be considered in matching surplus and deficit economic units? How would the Federal Reserve expand the money supply through an open market operation? How would the Federal Reserve expand the money supply using an open market operation? What is the relationship between risk and return? What is the relationship between risk and return? What are the two types of risk? And for which should the investor expect a return? What are the two types of risk, and for which should the investor expect a return? What are the three roles of the Federal Reserve? What are the three roles of the Federal Reserve? What the hell was that? In terms of the Federal Reserve, what are the three tools of monetary policy? In terms of the Federal Reserve, what are the three tools of monetary policy? What is the relationship between accounting profit and economic profit? Give an example of a type of cost that must be considered in economics and finance that may not be considered in accounting. Again, give an example of a cost that must be considered in economics and finance that cannot be considered in accounting. How many questions was that I've given you? 12. Oh, shit, you fools. Why did you stop me? Idiots. Grr. Okay, that's enough. Actually, I think I covered almost every damn question I'm going to ask you there. No! I was just going on there. I was saying, yeah, these are good damn questions. And I realized I'm reading the questions right off my board there. Oh, well. But again, I warn you, don't go to Investopedia, Wikipedia. Don't even go to the damn textbook. Go to your uncle here for your answers to these. Your funny uncle, but whatever, you know. Those stories are a lie. Remember, it's a single sentence, grammatically correct, and spell properly. Here's something. Misspelling a word is not all that great. Misspelling a word that was in the question just frosts my boxer lace. Not that I have boxer. No. Anyway, But I mean, really, I mean, at least spell the full words that that are in the question properly. That wasn't all of them, but I gave you, I think, four that, or a close, the wording might be a little different, but that was close to four of the five, I think, that are going to be on there. Now, let me go back real quick here, and I'm just going to give you a little bit of detail about part one. I can't really tell you a huge amount because it's all over the board. In part one, I could ask you questions about the technical details about how the Federal Reserve works or how it's organized, how many governors are there. The chairman is one of the governors. The chairman is not one of the governors. How many permanent voting seats are there? How many rotating voting seats are there? Questions like that I could ask you in multiple choice, that kind of technical question. Another thing I could do in the multiple choice is I could ask you to price a simple discount treasury bill. Remember when we did that in class? The price of a one-year treasury bill is $97.75. What's the yield on the treasury bill? I most likely will ask you a question like that. It's that quick calculation kind of thing. Okay, remember that bond quotes are at a tenth of the actual price. Just so if you see $97.75, that actually means $977.50. Just remember that. What else? Oh, I could ask you, for example, something about ratios. I could say, all right, here's some ratios. Which one of these would be something that would scare the hell out of you? Well, I wouldn't put it like that because someone might see the exam and say I used the word hell. That's okay, I'm Jewish. We don't believe in hell. Well, we do. Everyone goes there. What was I saying? I'd say, all right, here's some ratios. Okay, we got a return on assets of 14%. Is that a problem? Or we got a return on equity of 8%. We've got a more net margin of less than 1%. Is that a problem right off the top of your head? Well, you can answer those kinds of things. Just look at them and say which one of these would actually be something that would be absolutely an issue instead of, I'd have to talk about the industry kind of an issue. As far as other questions that go on there, definitional questions about the structure of institutional finance. About the three different types of finance. So I remember there's corporate management, managerial management finance. Then there's the investments finance, and then there is the institutional finance that you can get involved in. I could ask some questions about, even in this section, I could talk about find the market cap. If I give you some information, find what the market cap of this corporation is. Which one of these documents would be the most likely source for information about, which one of these documents would be the best resource for audited financial statements? The AR, the 10Q, the 10K, the 8K, the SS1. I'm sorry, the SS9. Okay. Which is the most common form of business organization in the world? Sole proprietorship, partnership, LLC, corporation. Some of them will be really like no-brainer kinds of things. Some of them will be more of a, well, wait a minute, let me think about that for a while. Oh, well, I'll just flip a coin and guess. I could give you a couple of pictures, and say, all right, here's some supply and demand dynamics going on. Supply curve shifting, demand curve shifting. Which one of these would represent a contractionary monetary policy being executed through OMOs? Something along that line. I could do a couple like that. Again, I could show you a supply and demand graph, different supply shifting out, demand shifting, and all that. All right, which one of these graphs is representing an open market operation to drain liquidity from the economy? By the way, you need to know what I mean by liquidity. You need to know what I mean by liquidity. I could go through in essay or in multiple choice, I could go through and ask you questions about risk, premia. Remember that different debt instruments carry different levels of different types of risk premia and levels. The three risk premia are the maturity premium, the default premium, and the illiquidity premium. Make sure you know what I mean by the risk-free rate. Know the two components of the risk-free rate. That's the real rate of return and the expected inflation premium. Watch out for wording. Economic decision-making is driven by expectations, not by reality. Reality gets to us soon enough. But when we behave in an economic fashion, as we do in financial markets, we behave based upon expectations of the future, not upon historical dust. So that would mean that if I were to say the risk-free rate is the sum of the real rate of return and the inflation premium, true or false, what would you say? Again, the risk-free rate is the sum of the real rate of return and the inflation premium. What would you say? True or false? Say false. Okay, say false. False. That's good. Yes. Because it's the risk-free rate is the real rate of return plus the expected inflation premium. You cannot look at what inflation was, what inflation is. What you have to look at and the way financial markets react is on what they expect inflation to be, not upon what has already happened. So watch out for wording, nuances of wording. In the multiple choice, I could also ask you about systemic versus non-systemic risk. So important in finance. The whole idea of risk drives us. It motivates all of what we do in finance. If the future were certain and there were no risks at all in the future, you wouldn't even have to be here because everything is already guaranteed. By being here, you're taking a risk. But at the same time, you expect something out of it. No guarantees, though. You could still end up working at McDonald's. And again, I do expect some kind of a discount if you end up there. Oh, mother's work is never done. Also, I could ask you things about the components of volatility. Like net income, the volatility at the net income line is typically larger than sales volatility. What causes that? Well, there are, as you saw, variable costs don't cause volatility to magnify. It's fixed costs, and it's those fixed costs are of two kinds. One is operating fixed costs, and the other kind of fixed costs are your interest payments. Those are what magnify volatility, not variable costs. So make sure you know what I mean. When I say business risk is the sales risk and operating leverage. Those are the two things that create your business risk. In other words, the CV at the EBIT line. Business risk is your CV at the EBIT line. That is propelled by the sales volatility, no doubt about that, but it's also your fixed operating costs. And that is what magnifies, that second one is what magnifies your volatility from sales down to EBIT. And then, if you've got fixed interest payments to make every year or whatever, you get more magnification of volatility through financial leverage getting to your net income. volatility. And so that's why net income volatility is bigger, typically, than sales volatility. It's because of those two different types of risk. The piece of business risk that magnifies sales volatility through fixed operating costs, and then this financial leverage that is magnifying your risk from EBIT down to net income. Know the differences among the types of debt instruments. What I mean by a bill versus a note versus a bond. A bill versus a note versus a bond. Know what is meant by issuer, that is seller, and purchaser, that is buyer, of a debt instrument. The issuer, the seller, is the borrower. The purchaser, the buyer, is the lender. So when you borrow money, you are issuing a debt instrument. The price you command for it is the loan amount that is being given to you by the buyer, that is the lender of the instrument. Okay, make sure you know that. I'll throw that at you in multiple choice some way. Well, you borrowed $20 from your friend. You'll pay him back next week. What did you just do? Okay, did you buy a bond? Did you sell a note? Did you issue a bill? Did you purchase a bill? I'll give you a multiple choice one like that. Oh, a mother's work is never done. Oh. I think that's enough. I've given you enough. It's your turn. Ask me questions. You got any questions for me? Yeah.
What do you mean by liquidity?
Oh, that's very good. Someone hit him over the head. Okay. Let me show you. Okay. Now, this is quite the honest truth. One of my passions in the world is mango smoothies. Okay? Mango smoothies. Now, there's this place at the mall, and the fellow is a good friend of mine. He says, "You would like your mango smoothie today?" "Yes, I would." "Okay, that will be $5. And I say, "Here's $5. Thank you." He makes me a smoothie. $5, and he goes, and I got a smoothie. Minutes. Maybe even less than a minute. He moves fast. It's so cool with the way he chops up that mango. Real mango, by the way. Some ice cream, some yogurt, and it gives you the win, though. Don't get those if you have problems like that or if you're going on a date. But, it, you know, if you're a loser like me, you know, and you can identify with it, I'm sure. Yeah, no big thing. So the $5 bill liquidated into a really liquid smoothie very quickly. Okay, now. You say, "You know what, that sounds good." So you go to the mall to this same guy and you say, "I should like a smoothie." You say, "Oh, okay, that would be $5. And you say, "I don't have $5. "What do you have?" And you look at him and you say, "I've got me. I'm surely worth $5. Professor Craig says I am. I read this thing when I was in second grade that said I am worth $1 million because I'm special just the way I am." They lied to you, by the way, but that's not, you can be emo about that later. Okay, but okay, now he kind of looks at you and he says, "This is going to be difficult." So he takes you behind the counter and he cuts up some mango and he puts it in this giant blender and he puts you in there. Now, I ask you, how quickly are you going to liquidate into a smoothie? I mean, for one thing, those glasses are going to just crank away. Go, click, 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 click. Your bones, they'll eventually go. The marrow will get mixed in with it. Okay. Not very liquid, right?
low liquidity. High value, low liquidity. Liquidity is the ease with which one asset can be turned into another asset. So that $5 bill I had, it could be turned from the asset of a $5 bill into the asset of a smoothie within a minute. But how long would it take your asset, both of them, two loaves, you to turn into a liquid smoothie? Not as easily. You couldn't make a house into a smoothie very easily. You couldn't make a $10 million certificate of deposit into a smoothie very easily. You could not make a euro dollar into a smoothie very easily. So, you follow the idea? Okay. Now, let me try just a couple on you real quick here. I mentioned euro dollars. They're actually not liquid, and that's why we distinguish between like M0, M1, M2, M3 money. At M0, you're talking about the most liquid form of, that money can take. It's just coins and bills, dollar bills. That's M0. It's called our base currency, the base of the money supply at M0. And then at M1, you throw in checking accounts because they are so, you write a check, use your debit card, just instantly you got money out of it. M2 includes M1, but it also includes some things that aren't as liquid, like those NOW accounts at credit unions. For all intents and purposes, they really are quite liquid, but they don't have to be. It also includes some small CDs as well. CDs, you can't just turn those into a cheeseburger. You try to go to Wendy's with a CD, you'll get a cheeseburger, but there will be a substantial interest penalty for early withdrawal. You see, less liquid. Then you get to the big kahuna, M3, the one that the Fed stopped publishing because it was going completely out of control. M3, that's when you get into these things like these massive CDs. You can't even tell this is money, really. The euro dollars, those international foreign reserves of currencies, they can't be turned into something easily. And then even above that, I mean, we used to, back a long time ago, and they don't even talk about it. I don't even mention it in economics classes I teach. There was a currency that was called L. It was at the top of the food chain. Just about anything that had any way of being turned into something else, that was L. It included everything below it, all the M3 stuff, which included M2, which included M1, which included M0. But L also included things that were just like, you would never even imagine that those were assets. But even at the level of M3, the stuff in M3 that's not in M2, you would never even possibly know that it existed. It would not look like any kind of money. And physically, it probably doesn't even exist anymore. It's just electrons and computers and networks these days, M3 stuff is, that highly illiquid stuff. So that gives you an idea of liquidity and why it's important. Remember, with liquidity, you get ease of asset change. But the price of that is that you're not going to be able to invest it as well. You see, because if I keep a dollar in my pocket, instant liquidity. I can get my burger, my smoothie, whatever, but I earn no interest off it. In order for me to earn anything worthwhile off that, I've got to put it into something where I don't have as easy access to it as I did before. So there's always that trade-off, and companies have this dilemma too. Because you want in a company to have enough money to pay your bills. You want a liquidity base in current assets. But every dollar you keep in that current assets is a dollar that's not working in the long-term assets to increase that return on assets, that ROA. So it's always a trade-off in how you're going to play your hand that way. There was something else I was going to, I suddenly hit me that I needed to tell you. I can't remember what it is. If I don't tell you, you're going to flunk the exam. Oh, well, I can't remember. No, seriously, there was something I was that kind of occurred to me I wanted to mention here. And it'll come to me in a minute here. But, okay, that was a very long answer. Are you satisfied with that answer? Imminently satisfied. Good, good. Now go get that smoothie, but take money with you because it's everyone else waiting in line bitches because it takes so long to get you liquid in the smoothie. They get hungry for their smoothies waiting for you to get liquidated. Okay?
Other questions you have in this?
I wish I could remember what that was that I was going to ask you about. I can't remember what it was, but anyway.
Nevertheless, other questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Next card,
yeah, front and back. I'm not going to go around and bug you about it. Let's see your note card, okay? Someone said, can I put my note card on my cell phone? No! It's a good idea, but not yet. Although I did have to say, I saw something cool last night. I was at Best Buy. I was going to get something there. The guy in front of me had a Best Buy card, but it was on his cell phone. He just flashed it on, and they scanned his cell phone. I thought, you know, that was actually kind of cool, except they probably collected every piece of data on him when they did that scan. So anyway, other questions? Make sure that you have a calculator that's functioning with you. I don't bring a lot of calculators with me. And what else? Oh, yeah, and your card. And that should be all you need to ace this. Check on, I'll put up an answer key to that quiz. Check tomorrow, I'm sorry, Sunday night for the narrative, for that information that might help you on the exam. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.